Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Fourth Lines. I'm your host, Marlon Ranger. And of course, we got my man, Lou Matic. Ones and twos. Brothers, a lot of things to go over, especially in the world of football, college football, collegiate football, of course, NFL football, a little bit of basketball, some MLB going through. Of course, that won't mean anything until late in the season when playoffs start and arrive. But Lou, how are we doing, my man? Can you hear me, Lou? Are you there? I guess we're having a bit of technical difficulties. He'll probably chime in a little bit later on. And of course, I've been watching the things that have been going on in the preseason, mainly with the Carolina Panthers and the issues of Cam Newton getting into a tussle at training camp. And everybody knows these fights tend to happen consistently with everybody. But for the most part, we know that the quarterback usually isn't a part of that. Apparently, he got caught in one of the main scuffles on the field. What does that show about his leadership? What does it speak towards him as a character, as a person? And personally, you know, I wouldn't put too much stock in it. And in my opinion, I wouldn't. I don't think it's necessarily such a bad thing to get somewhat aggressive in training camp. You know, you're playing on offense. You're going against defense. You want to make it known. He wants to assume that authoritative role as leader on that team. He is the leader on that team, and if sometimes he has to get into a bit of a scuffle, that's warranted. And I see the media somewhat making somewhat of an issue. Ron Rivera came out, had some disparaging comments against Cam, and I don't know. I think you have to support your quarterback because he's basically saved your job for the past two seasons. And let's not really, you know, spread and act like we don't understand that. Ron Rivera was on the verge of losing his job the first and the second season. When they was basically out of the playoffs, Cam Newton had to come back, lead that team to the playoffs the first year, and then last year do the same exact thing. So they've gotten to the playoffs 2 years in a row, advanced even, and it's due to the shoulders or the broad shoulders of Cam Newton putting that team on his back. So from time to time, is there going to be a scuffle or a situation where there's going to be some kind of issue moving in the future? Of course. Absolutely. We see that. It looks like Lou is about to chime in again. Lou, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
There you go. I was just getting into the Cam Newton training camp fight situation. And I think, you know, you really look at this and you see the media blowing this story up and making it a big time issue, saying that he is, you know, other than a leader, other than, listen, these things happen. This is nothing new. There's always scuffles in training camp. This is why there's training camp. As long as he doesn't do or perform this kind of situation or act during a game, no biggie, right? Training camp is going to have your scuffles. You got to have your iron out. You got people trying to make the team. They're fighting. They're scrapping. You know what I mean? You're going to have these kind of issues. What is your idea and opinion?
Yep, it's a non-issue. I mean, things like this happen during training camp, you know, people competing for their spot on the team where they want to start or, you know, coming as a reserve. But this is just another situation that's blown out of proportion because it's a quarterback and media wants to keep picking on the black quarterback.
Yeah, it's like it always seems to somewhere somehow get to that. You know, it just seems like we cannot escape that stigma fully until we see one actually go out and be extra successful, like Warren Moon, like Doug Williams. These guys have big shoes to fill. You look at Cam's build. He has an amazing body structure, 270, 265 pounds, six, all lean, muscular, has all the abilities, can throw, has a gun of an arm, can run the ball. He is the prototypical, if you had a versatile quarterback, he would be the picture of him. Just on the physicality of it, right? Just looking at him, he would be that guy, right? So I typically, you know what I mean, I look at him and it's like, you know, sometimes mentally, can he sabotage himself? Could he, you know, necessarily make a wrong move, make a wrong call, act a little bit dismissive on the sideline, not engaged? That can happen from time to time. He can come off as conceited from time to time. But all in all, you know, he's had some impressive resumes. Rookie of the year, came back, he's been to the playoffs 2 years in a row. He has advanced. If he was possibly a white quarterback, do you think he'd be facing this much scrutiny?
Nope. I think we had a situation like that. I don't remember who, but we had a situation like that where it happened. It was either in training camp or like practice during the season, and it was talked about for, you know, that week, and we haven't heard nothing else since. I can't recall who it was.
Yeah, I'm not even sure of that either. But, you know, you really look at some of these other quarterbacks, you know, and I'm going to give you some examples here. Like a really great quarterback, in my opinion, who has, you know, pretty much not the same physical abilities as Cam, but has the same similar type of progression in the hell. You look at Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan's a really great quarterback. He passes the ball. He doesn't run. He's very solid, but look at his performances of his team. And he has two all-star, all-pro wide receivers, right? He has Julio Jones, and he has Roddy White on the outside. That really had so much of a running game, but, I mean, at one point he had Tony Gonzalez. That was a stacked team. You know, he had plenty of weapons to throw the ball to, and he's been successful, and you can tell he's a great quarterback, but he hasn't accomplished as, you know, just about as much as Cam Newton. He came before Cam Newton, and still nobody really says much of a peep or has an issue with him per se. And that might be for various reasons, maybe to do with his attitude. And I would use that as an example. Could be his attitude, maybe not. But I kind of noticed that thing. And then, of course, the one that is the worst, who really, you know, through all of this, you know, tell me anybody that could be like Jay Cutler. You know, have all the physical traits and abilities, none of the competitive juices and edge, and still get an extension and money like he got from Chicago. There's no, you know, there's no black quarterback that could do that, I don't think. And I'm not trying to make this a race issue, but then at the same time, it kind of is a race issue. His attitude is way worse than Cam Newton. And you could never, you know, accuse Cam Newton of never, you know, getting, never being competitive, right? That's the same issues we hear about Jay Cutler. I mean, ex-players and people on that roster are saying this about him. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of figure that thing out. He's managed to outlive. He's gotten two coaches fired. It's like, come on. Like, when does it stop? You know, I don't see it. You got to remember back in the day when Cutler was in Denver. Remember New England's offensive coordinator at the time, that McDaniels, right? Was coach, and him and Cutler got into it. He hurried up and tried to get Cutler out of there. Got him out of there. That's how he got to Chicago. Got Chicago. Lovie Smith was there. He dealt with it. Lovie Smith got fired. Trestman comes in, and it's like, man, I'm giving you everything you need, and they're not getting it right. So they get rid of him. Now John Fox is there. That's three coaches. Could a black quarterback do that? And not have some kind of scrutiny, and look at this, get paid. get a high salary? No, it couldn't happen. So you know, that's primarily what we see with that. I know the Steelers also, their kicker, Susham, I guess that's his name. You know, the kicker for the Steelers basically has a torn ACL. Looks like he's done for the season. Oh, time to get another one. Not so good, not so great. So it's crazy. You know, I don't quite, you know. Steelers expect to be very highly explosive this year offensively, especially. I mean, you got, you know, Antonio Brown off the season. He came back, the young talent of Martavius Bryant. Of course, you know, the running back, I can't believe I can't think of right now his name. Running back basically suspended for the first four games for that substance abuse situation that he had with LeGarrette Blount with the weed last season. He'll be gone for four games, or is it three games, one of those. But once he gets together, you know, that's a pretty formidable team, man. I got to say, you know, pretty impressive. Pretty impressive with what we see. And they were offensively pretty great last season. And, of course, the Raiders doing that. And they got Jack Del Rio now as their coach. He's looking to try to change some things, bring some energy to Raider Nation. But, listen, you know, it's the third year. You know, Derek Carr, he looked real impressive last season as a rookie quarterback. They got the guy from – I can see – you tell I'm struggling here, Lou, because basically I can't even remember some of the things. But I think Amari Cooper is the name, is the wide receiver. Of course, they got Crabtree being as weapons for Derek Carr. And I expect to see some nice results coming out of Oakland. Nothing more than like five or six games, but improvement in gameplay. I expect to see that next season. So we're going to see what he does. I think they're a real solid, real great defensive coach. He didn't do such a bad job in Jacksonville. People forget that's the last time Jacksonville went to the playoffs is when he was there. So easy to see. So Steve Smith for the Ravens is basically talking retirement after this season. And I think that's about right. I think he's going to make the Hall of Fame. Everywhere he's went, he's shined. He's about 36 now. I know, I think he's got over 13,000 yards, as a matter of fact. So he's in the history books in the top 20 in almost every category, except for touchdown catches. I think he's like 33rd. But other than that, man, you know, for his size and what he's accomplished in his career, and he has one more season to go, he's going to be within those limits. And I think you have to go ahead and put this guy in the Hall of Fame. He'll be in the Hall of Fame, maybe not first ballot, but he'll make it. Unbelievable speed. He was great. Great for Carolina, who was great last season for the Ravens. At his age, that's pretty impressive. So, primarily what I see. The Chargers, you know, they criticized San Diego's deal for a stadium plan. I don't know what the deal is, really. The architecture of the stadium, I guess, is not impressive enough. And who knows, they're probably going to get out of there and move, what is that? How would I say, bro? They're probably going to end up moving to L.A., maybe. And L.A. is really trying to get almost two teams, not even one, which makes sense because, look, they're worth a lot of money. You know what I mean? Like, L.A. is second largest city in the United States behind New York City. Big enough, has enough people. Enough people will go to see the event. The thing is, California has all—they always have something to do out there. So to focus on just solely sports, it's like it's not a necessity. But their teams always fill up the stadium. USC sells out, and over the course of these past few years, so is UCLA. So they've definitely shown the aptitude or the environment to where they could sell out. CJ was a Hall of
That'll be that'll be after probably the first couple of seasons, and then everybody will stop going.
I don't know. I don't think so. I think it's to the point now where
it doesn't have anything to do with the team. It's just that the traffic is horrible.
Yes, the worst in the nation. I've been to LA one time. That interstate is the worst I've ever seen. And I tell you what, coming from Florida and then having to been to Atlanta and see what that traffic is like, that's pretty bad. But this is like twice as rough. I mean, it's like 2 hours on that freeway. And you got to ask yourself, why is, you know, and this is a side note, but why is the place or amount, or how would I say, how is it a road that has no stoplights always busy? Nobody can answer that question for me. You know the answer to that?
I don't know either. Could be a possibility that within that route to the area, there's no other accessible, you know, like side roads or any side roads that would make sense that go in that direction. So pretty much that highway is pretty much the only route that goes from point A to point B in a specific direction that everybody needs to be at.
California's kind of funny. What I did notice is that a lot of it's connected to bad areas. So instead of getting off where you need to get off, you don't, because those places are always blocked off with something and nobody wants to take that route. Or maybe too many people are taking that route. They just need to do something with that engineer because it's not working for them. And it hasn't been for over the past decade. Maybe they need to go to 10 lanes, 12 lanes, a little bit more cross lanes. They need to figure out something. I mean, I know there's a genius somewhere that can look at that infrastructure and come up with something. Has to be. You know what I mean? That just has to be. But I tell you, it's something else. And something we typically seen. So I don't know what San Diego's going to do. But hopefully they can figure this thing out. So, and they probably won't. Knowing them, Lou, they just won't.
No, they won't. They haven't and they never will. That's the way it is.
Yeah, unfortunately, huh? So that's what we see. Life as a whole hurts. But so that's what's going on there, and we just have to kind of take our time and wait and see how things will translate and how things will get better for San Diego. I don't know if they're gonna be able to maintain that. Team's not really happy, but I don't know. We'll see. And I'm going to go ahead and slide because I know there was a Hall of Fame game between Minnesota and Pittsburgh. And, you know, Pittsburgh got pretty much beaten 14-3. But, you know, you would never necessarily just, you know, preseason is preseason. It's first game. Got the backups versus the other backups. That's what it is. You know what I mean? Nobody's going to really pay attention to the first. You'll see the starters in, like, I think the third game. They'll probably come in a little bit second game, maybe the first quarter. Third game, they're going to play the half. And then fourth game is all basically people trying to make the team. So,
yep.
We'll see how that works. And other than that, my man.
Play time to the lower ranks and the higher ranks. Keep them off the field as much as possible so they don't get hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. Primarily what it is. Even on Minnesota side, you're not going to see Adrian Peterson in preseason. They very rarely ever play him. I don't think he's played in a preseason game in a while. You know. So. Okay, well, let's slide to the NBA, and a couple of stories here. And
oh, there is.
Well, yeah, just a little bit, you know, about, you know, the Cavs and Tristan Thompson and what they expect to do. What do you think about that situation? Eventually, do you think it's going to get resolved? Is he asking for too much, or what do you think, Lou?
I think it's going to get resolved, but being how long it's going to take, I don't think he's going to be there much longer. Remember, he is a restricted free agent, so nobody else can get him. But being how long this is taking, I don't think he'll be with the Cavs much longer.
Wow. You might be right about that, man.
I guarantee you the most that they'll give him is 2 years.
2 years? Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's going to be hard. It's either, but see, I'd be looking to deal Varejao in about 2 years. He's been injured last season. I don't know if his production is going to be, or his upside is going to be any better than what I see from Tristan Thompson. Thompson's a rebounding machine, defensive machine, and Mozgov is just great. He gives you the offense. I mean, the two of them together, you got a real, you know, good two block center. You know what I mean? And I don't know. That's what I would say. What do you think?
They're going to keep, they got to keep Varejao because you got to have someone come off the bench behind Mozgov. Because I think it would be stupid to start Varejao and have Mozgov come off the bench. That wouldn't make any sense. But this whole situation is really iffy that everybody else on the Cavs is signed. Pretty much everybody that's been there that's been productive for them, they've re-signed back, except Tristan. I mean, you even signed J.R. Smith before Tristan Thompson. Yeah, something's not right with that picture.
Yeah, I agree.
And
man.
He has the same agent. Him and LeBron James share the same agent. So.
Man, I guess that's the case with that. Then, of course, we had the one, the one issue or the one question that was given to Michael Jordan about a one-on-one.
I'm not talking about this.
And this prime. I think it's, and then, he came out and said all-time Bulls would kill all-time Lakers team. Listen, I'm the biggest Michael Jordan fan, probably top 100 on the face of planet Earth. I don't think you'll find a bigger Jordan fan than myself too often, at least to the average world, right? Without actually stalking him. I'm just not going to do that. I don't love him like that. But
yeah, we don't know that.
As far as an appreciation for, there's some people, you got to say it. But as far as like an appreciation for what I got to see, if you don't understand, like I'm a Chicago Bulls fan. When Chicago was losing to Boston, it was losing to Philadelphia. And I mean, typically, they would barely make the playoffs. I mean, before Scottie Pippen was there, Doug Collins was there. I was watching the Bulls when the Pistons were beating them. See, that lets you know how old I am. They wasn't the Bulls that everybody raves about now. And he wasn't, surrounded with a cast and a supporting cast that was good or on the level of his talent, and his game had not switched the way it switched later on to what everybody else. I used to remember people used to be like, Michael Jordan, great, but it used to be a plethora. It used to be a lot of Magic Johnson. I remember going to school, a lot of Magic Johnson. In Orlando, being from Orlando, living here, everybody was on Shaq and Penny, right? Everybody, back then, they was not as much as were Bull fans before they won those championships. There was always the Bad Boy Pistons, the Lakers, and the Celtics. That's what we grew up with, right? And Lou, you being from Massachusetts, relocating to Orlando, there was some Celtics fans, not a lot, because at that time, I think there was on the way, kind of Larry Bird was on his way getting injured, the early Celtics, to where, you know, the torch was being passed to the Bad Boy at that specific time. It was, you know, we got a little bit of tail end of the Lakers, but by the time you moved to Orlando, it was already the Pistons. It was the, everybody was Pistons, everybody was Lakers. Pistons and Lakers. And the Bulls were there. They wasn't the top team. So I am a true avid fan of the Chicago Bulls. Still am a Chicago Bulls fan, but, you know, I don't talk about it because some, you know, it's just not really what I like. But Michael Jordan, watching him all those years, I've never seen anything like him. And not to say I've seen anything like LeBron James either. I just haven't seen anything like Michael Jordan. LeBron James is physically the most advanced player I've ever seen. Physically, you know, build-wise, height, weight, strength, speed, on a physical level, he is the best physical specimen I've ever seen. But if we're talking basketball, we're talking clutch. We're talking to the basket, relentless defense, relentless offense, which both of them have relentless offense. But one just has the edge when it comes to not losing, refusing to lose, forcing, imposing his will. I've never seen anything like Michael Jordan. And that's really in all sports, to be quite honest. Living, I know some people would say, you know, Muhammad Ali, and I couldn't necessarily disagree if they felt that way, but I didn't grow up. I wasn't able to see Muhammad Ali until it was late in his life. And at that particular point, it was pretty much over. I couldn't necessarily do anything at that particular point. It was finished. It was a wrap. So, watching Jordan, it was like you never seen anything like it. Came up big almost every time you watched him, you was going to enjoy the game. Every time you watched him, it was going to be a treat because he just was going to do it. And I tell you, if they had a one-on-one match, I don't think it would be a blowout like most people would think it'd be a blowout. I think it'd be fairly close. But at the end of the day, I think a Jordan in his prime, going against a LeBron James in his prime, I'm taking Jordan. There is nobody, bro, there's nobody more clutch than him. If the game comes down to two last shots, who you got your money on? LeBron or Jordan? If you talk about defense, was there anybody better defensively than Michael Jordan? Outside of Scottie Pippen? Maybe. LeBron is great defensive presence too, but he's not Jordan when it came to steals. And everybody talks about LeBron's quickness. Has anybody seen Jordan's quickness? He wasn't slow, I tell you that. He was, and the thing is that this is the difference. Jordan kills you from anywhere on the court. It's like he finds a way to kill you from anywhere. It doesn't matter. Mid-range, and it's almost impossible to block him. I can't recall, like, of course, everybody gets blocked, and I'm sure he's gotten blocked. But he was one of the most difficult people to block because he would just hang in the air, just hang there. He would adjust his body, contort it some kind of way to make this ridiculous shot. That's what I remember. And like I said, in his prime, was there anybody better? I don't think. Now, that's one thing, Lou. But now with this other one, though, this all-time Lakers team versus the all-time Bulls team, I don't see the Bulls winning that. I just don't.
No, I don't.
Well, if everybody in their prime, that's how we would have to base it, right? That means Magic in his prime, Kareem in his prime. Who else is on that squad? Shaq in his prime.
Yep.
who Kobe in his prime. And who's the point guard? Oh yeah, Magic's the point. Who is, okay, is Kobe forward or shooting guard on that team?
Maybe shooting guard.
We're going he shoots, so who's for? Is James Worthy playing forward?
Yeah.
Okay, and power, I guess, you can put Shaq in and Kareem both in, right? I'm guessing that's what they would do. Who would you put there as power forward? Or would it be Jerry West? Was Jerry West a power forward?
Jerry West was a shooting guard.
Yeah. The shooting guard, okay. Yeah, he was just really tall, wasn't he?
See, the thing about it with the Lakers, all-time Lakers or all-time Bulls, really you're talking about teams, players from specific eras of the Lakers. Whereas the Bulls, really, when you really break it down, the all-time Bulls team is that one season that they won 70 games.
Yeah, I would think so. And the problem is that you have to go against Kareem and Shaq. And they just don't have nobody on the inside that could take them both. I mean, Rodman played up against Shaq in his prime. People forget that. He was in Orlando Magic. And Rodman, you know, the Bulls lost to the Magic 1 year. But then they played Shaq the next year. And he matched up well defensively against him. But you're not going to be able to do that over the course of both him and Kareem. Who's going to be the other big man for – I'm trying to say, who's going to be the other big man? I don't know. The Bulls don't have one, do they? They might have somebody from like the early, you know, late 70s, early 80s. You know what I mean? Somebody like that. But during the modern era, they didn't have anybody. You going to put a Kareem in his prime? Kareem in his prime is probably the best center of all time. Him and Elijah Wan, right? Because look, that skyhook is unblockable. You can't block it. And people forget, when you really think about it, that guy could easily be one of the top three best people of all time, too. And, you know, all you would hear, like when I was, you know, we was younger and he was getting a little bit older, you know, getting close to the end of his career, he still was formidable, like, early on, in the mid-80s, early 80s. He was.
Yeah.
Not as, you know, formidable back in the 70s. In the late 70s, but, you know, he was pretty solid still. Guy has most points. Yeah, or is it Karl Malone? Is it Karl Malone or is it Kareem has most points in history?
Kareem has the most points.
Yeah, it's not even close, man. This guy was unstoppable. You playing that guy in his prime as a Laker. We got to say that, right? Not when he was with the Bucks, but a little bit after when he left the Bucks. Him in his prime, Shaq in his prime for the Lakers. Shaq for the Lakers. Sometimes I keep forgetting, you know, I keep sometimes think Shaq is almost like he's on Orlando's all-time list almost too, wouldn't he? He played, what, five seasons in Orlando? Or was it four?
He played four seasons.
Well, we know he won. Of course, I know he did get to the finals, but he didn't win. He won three in L.A. So, you know, but Shaq in his prime, Kareem in his prime, Magic, Worthy. Or did Wilt ever play for the Lakers?
Who?
Wilt Chamberlain. Did he play for the Lakers?
Yeah, he did.
I mean, long enough to be considered all-time Laker? How many seasons you played with them? Let me look this up.
I think so.
But how many years do you think you played with the Lakers? Wilt Chamberlain. I'm gonna look this up.
He was there long enough for, you know, the Lakers. That's pretty much where the Laker-Celtic rivalry came from with him and Bill Russell.
Yeah, you know what, you're right. You're 100% right. He played for the Lakers. Yeah. Well, he played for them for 5 years. He played with the Lakers 5 years. And it was like almost his last 5 years in the NBA. Philadelphia 76ers for 5 years as well. He played with the Warriors, which at the time was Philadelphia and San Francisco. He played with them for like 6 years. And for 1 year, he played with the Globetrotters as a rookie. So he, you know, I guess so, right? Five, six. Yeah. Philadelphia can claim him too.
Yeah.
I mean, he won a championship with them as well. And one with the Lakers, so he has two. And yeah, him during that time, yeah, bro. You know, it's just really not really good, man. I'm sorry. I mean, I love Mike, but I just don't know. You just on the fact that who we would have to play, you could put Shaq on the bench. I think I would take Kareem in his prime over Shaq. And it's not by much either. It's like 1A and 1B, right? But, you know, I could see that. But I look at the Bulls, you know, the Bulls front, I mean, that point that you got Derrick Rose in his prime, because I'm sure he's on that all-time team, right?
How?
So, I mean, who else is going to play? There's not a point guard better than him. And Bulls history, I don't think. I think he would be the point guard. I think he would, though. I think he would. Before the surgery? Oh, yeah. I think he would. I absolutely think he would, man. And if you put him at point, you got Jordan. So you got Rose, Jordan, and Pippen. Man, I'm telling you, that's really terrifying. Tim 3, I mean, who would we have at the power? Horace Grant? I would take, you know, I would take.
You'll have Horace Grant and Rodney.
I would take Grant out and play Rodney. And you know, I'm going to tell you this. This is who I would do, Luke. No, because we would bat it on the inside. But I would almost be tempted to say Kukoc, man. Kukoc used to be a matchup nightmare. Remember that? He was a matchup nightmare. Nobody could match up with him. He was so tall, he wasn't strong enough to play power position. But he was also a mismatch on the offensive side of the ball. He'd kill you with three or that jumper, and he was left-handed. I don't know. I just don't think they could beat that Lakers team. I don't think it would be by 50 points like Shaq said. No, I mean, it won't be 50 points. But, you know, I don't think they'd win.
No, they won't win.
I don't think they'd win.
It's basically a regular stat team going against an all-star team, basically, when you look at it.
Why you locked me out my room?
Yeah. So, that's why I would pick off the team. What do you think, Lou?
Yeah. I mean, regardless of who they would have, you know, especially at the forwards and the guards, you're still going to get killed at center because the Bulls don't have anybody at center. Look who all they had over the years. You had Luke Longley, Will Perdue, I mean, Robert Parrish for like a couple of years. That's not going to do nothing against Kareem, Shaq, and possibly Wilt Chamberlain. You can't do nothing against that.
Let me tell you, and, you know, Parrish wouldn't be considered a Bulls great. He's obviously a Celtic great. If we could have him, even him in his later days was better than Longley, right? Better than Winnington and Will Perdue. We got to say, let's be honest. And for that matter, I would take Cartwright over those guys. Cartwright was a better center than Will Perdue. He was a better center than Luke Longley. He was a better center than Bill Winnington. He was the worst out of the three, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was terrible. I mean, he would just be a body. He'd give you some foul plays, right? He'll take a couple of hard fouls or give you hard fouls on the opposing team. But that guy was garbage. Let's be honest about it. You know, he wouldn't get you, you know, a sandwich from Subway, would he? He couldn't do that.
Nope.
So, you know, that's what I see, Lou. That's what I see. I don't really see anything outside of that would be any different.
And even going back on the Lakers side, when you talk about Kobe, me personally, people will probably take the later Kobe, you know, when he scored 80 points and all that, wearing number 24, I would actually take
the early one.
You know, yeah, I would take 2000, starting from 2001, 2002, number 8 Kobe, where he buffed up to, like, I think 230 pounds.
That guy was, let me tell you something. This is the thing that kind of missed me a lot of times in comparisons. When you look at Kobe Bryant, he's the closest person that anybody has ever seen to Michael Jordan. Hands down, in gameplay, build, tenacity, clutch, you name it. And he actually had a better jump shot than Michael. Of course, he wasn't better than Michael, but, you know, in comparison, is he not the cookie-cutter version of Michael Jordan, if you were to have one? Yet, Michael is the best, but then people are so quick to put or elevate LeBron James over Kobe Bryant. I don't think he's better than Kobe. He's good now. At the end of the day, he'll be the top five, top, maybe even top six or top seven. I don't think he's better than Kobe. Kobe's not losing four. And, you know, this is sad. I can't. Two of these championships is hard for me to put those or hold those against LeBron James because, look, he didn't have a chance. That very first Cleveland team that played against San Antonio and this last Cleveland team that faced off against Golden State, even with all the injuries, they still had the opportunity to actually beat Golden State. They was up 2-1 in that series, but you couldn't legitimately say, you know, he failed them. He didn't fail them. You can't do as much as he did. I mean, it was so bad that he lost the finals and still almost won MVP. They had to. Nobody felt right giving it to Iguodala. They almost, remember that? That was a big-time controversy between either him or even Steph Curry getting it. It's like everybody felt that he should have got it because he played so well. I mean, he averaged almost a triple-double. I mean, what else could you ask of a superstar? He definitely provided, and he showed and he proved, and he was the best player on the court. So it's not really against him per se, but listen, a loss is a loss. You even lost in your prime. He lost at Dallas, and there's no excuse for that one. He just didn't show up. And that you can never say about a Kobe Bryant or a Michael Jordan. In a finals game, you can't do that. You cannot do that. You cannot average 17 points if you're a superstar. He made a big mistake, and his passive attitude did that to him.
Yeah.
And the series against San Antonio was it last season? Not the season just after, the season before. Look, that San Antonio team, they really have a team of just like, you know, like how do they do this? Like, really think about it. Are those really all time greats outside of Duncan? Come on, Duncan, Ginobili and Tony Parker are basically in the moonlight of their prime right now. They're pretty much over, right? They're never going to average or be as good as they were, you know, 5 to 10 years ago. So you really look at it, you look at Kawhi Leonard, you're looking at people like, you know, Green, right? Patty Mills, people like that. And it's like, who are these guys? That's more or less like really great coaching and putting the pieces together and great GM work, right?
Yep.
They beat that LeBron team. Basically, they just blew them out of the gym 4-1. Wasn't even competitive. I think they lost by the largest margin of any finals team in history. That's not happening to Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan. Let's be honest, right? Kobe has, what, 2 finals losses, right? That team that had Karl Malone and everybody on it, they lost to the Pistons. And then the other team that lost to the Celtics, right? Just recently here with Paul Pierce. And you know what? If you want to be honest, he could have been – Kobe could easily have 3 losses. Because I tell you what, that phantom call on your boy Perkins, that really saved the season, didn't it? Game 6 and late in the 3rd quarter. That really saved the season. That little phantom call, it like, you know, what was the ref looking at?
Yeah.
You know, if you match them up, I mean, Jordan is the only person in the history of the game to have a 0 in the loss column when it comes to finals. And let's not forget, he took 2 years off. He could have easily went 8, and then he could have kept playing. He could have kept, right? Because the ownership of the Bulls basically forced Phil Jackson out of there. Scottie Pippen and the rest of the crew said, you know what, I'm getting out of here. Jordan says, okay, I'm leaving the game for a little bit. He takes, 2-3 years off, comes back with Washington, and still was, you know, averaging over 23 points a game. I mean, he lost about a good 4 to 5 years of prime basketball. That team could have won easily, either anywhere between 8 to 9 championships. It could have easily been 9-0. Can you believe that? That year, the Rockets won back-to-back. No mistake. You know, without Jordan, you know, Jordan left the first season. The Bulls still won 55 games. What was it, 57? 55? 55 games? I can't remember what their record was. They won over 50-plus games. The season right after that, they won 47-35 without Jordan. Can you imagine if he would have stayed those 2 years? There's no way. And they, and you remember when the Bulls lost to the who was it? They lost to New York, right? That 1 year, another situation, another phantom call. Bulls lost in 7 games with Kukoc and Pippen. You tell me you have Jordan, he doesn't win 2 championships. Orlando got him. They played him. He basically came back with 18 or 17 games left in that season. Was wearing the number 45. Remember that? Switch jerseys. Because 45 were working, he was taking the fine, right? Then the NBA was fining him for unretiring his number. He took the fine anyway, it didn't matter because he's Michael Jordan. And they lost to the Magic. That's Shaquille's probably highlight moment between him, Dennis Scott, and who else? Penny Hardaway, Nick Anderson. Nick Anderson, another guy that's underrated. Almost like a Mitch Richmond type of field, Nick Anderson. That guy was really, to be quite honest, one of the best players on that Magic team. Everybody looks to Shaq. Everybody looks to Penny. Nick Anderson, right? I remember when him and Jordan faced off, and Nick had like 64 points, and Jordan had like 69 or something like that. I remember that game, and the Bulls lost that game. And like double or triple overtime. It was crazy. They put on a show that night. But, I mean, the Bulls could have easily had 8 to 9 championships. I mean, after that season, people were getting tired of them winning. So, you know, it could have been much worse. And I know people that have revisionist history forget that. I mean, Olajuwon, he had to leave in order for everybody else to win. They got tired of it. So, look at that. And, yeah, you got to match them up with the great. I mean, Magic Johnson or even Larry Bird. Let me tell you something. Some of these guys, I'm not even sure LeBron is better than those two. I mean, physically, yes, but we're talking basketball here, right? You really think? You think about this, bro? Was it? You look at Larry Bird. You look at Magic. Is he really better than them two? You got to really ask yourself that question, because both me and you have seen Larry Bird and Magic Johnson play in their prime. We saw what that looked like, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's people. See, these young guys, they don't know. They only see. Yeah,
you don't
know.
Even have to go back that far. You go back to, like, the later 90s, another guy who I believe he wasn't better than him if it wasn't for those multiple ankle surgeries, and that's Grant Hill.
Yeah, well, Grant, before that, let me tell you something. Before that injury, and that injury, like, ruined him, Grant Hill was a – you remember how he came out the gate? It was ridiculous what he was doing and what he was bringing
Grant
to the table.
Hill,
he was unstoppable.
They're basically the same type of player. They play the same type of game. The only difference is LeBron is, you know, stronger.
But
Grant Hill, both of their outside shooting range is the same. The only thing, Grant Hill was a way better ball handler. I mean, how many times do you see Grant Hill isolation? How do you run an isolation play that's 10 feet away from the basket? It's like sitting in the paint and just let this guy just do that. And he takes one dribble, spin move, dunk on three players. Grant Hill, he gets to the lane anytime he wants. Triple-double machine.
When he was with the Pistons originally, that guy coming out of the gate those first three or four seasons was a horror. He was definitely on his way to a championship before that injury. But, I mean, listen, we could even look at Tim Duncan. We can look at Elijah Wan. We can look. A lot of these guys, man, were like really, like over a consistent period of time, a better record in the finals, even Barkley. But see what it is. People look at LeBron's physique, and I'm not going to take anything from him. When it's all said and done, he's going to be in that upper echelon, and you know, we can't take that away from him. We got to give him his credit. I'm just saying, don't be so quick to say that all these other players are not as good, or he's just hands down better than some of these other players. It's not necessarily true. Some of these other players was like really good. They're better than anybody that I see today. Everybody looks at the game today. We know it's nowhere near as physical, right? The talent pool is nowhere on the same level. The college game, those guys spent 3-4 years playing together in college. They spent 3-4 seasons playing in college, come out, develop their game. They were well-rounded. They could shoot jump shots, post shots, free throw shooting was the best as it was. Today, you look at the game, it's like nobody knows how to shoot free throws outside of the point guard. And even some of the point guards don't know how to shoot free throws. I mean, they're hitting, what, 70%, 78%, 76%? Back then, it'd be almost, you know, blasphemy if anybody hit lower than 90% if you was a point guard. You were somewhere around the top, right? Even Jordan himself, what? Jordan was, what, 80, 86, 80, 88% free throw shooter? Those guys can play. They can dribble, they can run plays, and they played against the more physical competition. Can you imagine with the rules? The way they are today, man, Jordan and those guys would probably be averaging 40 and 50 points a game. He almost averaged that with the rules being as physical as it was back then. There's no Bad Boys Piston team nowadays. Who is that team, Lou?
They don't exist. Never seen them.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Because they don't exist. You don't see that anymore. It's definitely a watered-down version of what we used to watch when we grew up. And it still was enough offense. You still had to go to State Warriors. You still had the Phoenix Suns, right? Those teams could put points up on the board. The Bulls could. The Lakers could. They put points on the board. But they just played phenomenal defense as well. And they played against tough teams, physical teams. And it's just not that way anymore. Now you can't breathe on somebody. You can't blow in their ear, right? If you touch them with your finger, it's a foul. And what's funny, they don't even make use of the points they get. So the talent pool is nowhere near the level it was when those guys were playing. It just seems like it. What it is, you have a lot of athletic guys, so they're quicker, right? You know, you got athletic point guards. You got Westbrook. You got Rose. You know, you got, you know, Iverson kind of ushered that whole generation in, right? So bringing in more athletic hybrids of point guard. You know, you got a LeBron James. You might have big shooting guards, and they're quick. And, you know, James Harden, guys that are quick and nimble. And they can shoot, but they're not on the same level. They're barely demanding in their own generation. So, you know, LeBron is head and shoulders, and of course Durant, head and shoulders, that guy. And I haven't seen anything like Westbrook. I'm going to say that right now. With his tenacity, outside of, you know, Iverson, he's a little bigger than Iverson, and boy, he's just a killer. So, Lou, it looks like we're coming to the conclusion of the show, so I guess we have to go ahead and let the credits get to rolling and the music to start playing, right? The slow music. And we'll catch these guys Friday, 8 o'clock, once again. And, bro, with that, we say peace, love, and happiness. Have a good one.
Feel the rage of hell in the sky.